I have the power to choose to set my mind down.
We need to start off by defining what meditation is, I think. So if you could provide an explanation to that, Ned.
Sure. First, maybe I'm going to back it up one notch and talk about my involvement with meditation and why, you know, why I'm qualified to talk about this subject. And I think I've shared at the beginning of the podcast, I was with the Ashaya monks for 8 years, and that I took vows, became a monk. But more than that, I've dedicated my life to having a meditation practice. You know, meditation has been a good part of my life. And it's so, and the what I bring to the table when I talk about meditation is more experience than knowledge of about it. So I'm bringing experience to the table that I've been diving into this practice for a long time, and I see meditation as a much different thing than what you may realize in your mind, what the concepts that you have about meditation. So when you say define meditation, it's simply the practice of turning inward to the silence within. It's a practice, and more than it's a teaching or it's something to know about, it's something that we practice. And to define we can't really define meditation. Takes us, there's so many layers and levels to your meditation, and meditation changes, and it gets sweeter and deeper. And sometimes it's very shallow, and you don't get anything from it. But it's one of those things where, you know, you just keep practicing and you just keep diving inward, and it has a cumulative effects on you.
Mm-hmm. Meaning that one meditation that may not have seemed all that profound over time equals some kind of sum.
Yeah, there's sort of a momentum that's built throughout your experiences with meditation. And we sort of look at, we want to put a dollar in and get a dollar's worth of experience. You know, we like to think of life as always being this fair exchange. So if we want to put in 50 cents and take out a dollar worth of experience. And so with meditation, it's one of those practices where you don't always see the reward of what you're putting in, but it's a slow accumulative process that builds on itself over time.
Right. So with that being said, we need to then discuss what some of the benefits are then to meditation.
Yeah, that's a good question. So the benefits we can look at in different ways. So when we first get into meditation, and at the surface level of meditation, the benefits is relaxation. So at the first level of meditation, just stopping. Even if you're stopping and you're thinking the whole time and you're not actually meditating, but you're taking a break and resting your physical body, there's relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that can be the first step. And then when you go a little bit deeper in the meditation, it helps de-stress the body. You know, you can help alleviate the stress that's building up in your nervous system. So meditation has a way of de-stressing us. And if we actually turn into the silence, we take meditation in a deeper level where we get to know the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get to know the soul, then everything changes. Like our relationship with everything. Meditation, the benefits to it is it changes your relationship that you're having with your mind. So the relationship with my mind before meditation is that every thought was me, every thought was important. And this sort of goes back again to the first session where we're talking about thoughts and thinking. So meditation is a practice where you're learning how to step back and put space between you and your thoughts.
That's a great explanation. And so I have to wonder, though, too, because myself personally, I don't have a lot of experience with meditation. But there has to be a lot of misconceptions about meditation. What would you say some of the common ones are? Like maybe things that people have said to you.
Yeah, it's funny when you talk about meditation. Some people, they glaze over and they just kind of look at you like, oh, yeah, okay. they have this idea that if you're going to meditate, then that's something that monks do or funny yoga people do, or you have to be East Indian, or they don't know what it is. And I think it's getting to be more mainstream now. And that the paradigm around meditation is a little different. 20 years ago, when I first got into meditation, it was looked at in a much different way. So there's misconceptions about meditation, and they think, there's a lot of people that think that it's just you just sit down, you go cross-legged, and touch your fingers and chant om. There's many different aspects to meditation. There's a lot of experience that can be gained through meditation, and there's lots of different ways to practice meditation. I'm throwing out a lot there. So the practices of meditation, we can practice meditation with our eyes closed. We can practice meditation with our eyes open. You know, the misconception is that you have to close your eyes to get to go into meditation. The misconception, one of the greatest ones, is that people will say to me, well, I can't do that. I can't stop thinking. Mm-hmm. And I think we expelled that myth on the first session, is that, no, you can't stop having thoughts. You could stop thinking anytime you chose to. Like, if I'm sitting here now with you and I told you you have to think about something, would you?
Mm-hmm. No.
No. No, you wouldn't have to do that at all. And so just because a voice comes in your head, does that mean you have to think about what they say? You know, it goes back a couple sessions when we talked about the speaker in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's so there's a misconception that we stop our thoughts, you know, and we can't stop our thoughts for the most part. It's like trying to stop a freight train with a toothpick. You know, it's just not going to happen. But meditation isn't about stopping your thoughts. It's about changing your relationship to them as they drop into you.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and that's, ironically enough, that's one of the benefits of meditation, is that meditation changes your relationship with the thoughts that are dropping into you.
The depth of your soul is an endless journey of great wonder.
And are there other benefits that it can serve your mind?
Yeah, there's also physical benefits also to meditation. And there's been some interesting studies that have popped up in the last few years in around the benefits of meditation. There's benefits that actually affect the brain. You know, meditation, they say, helps shrink the amygdala, and it helps you so that you're not overactive in your emotions. So it helps ground and stabilize emotions. Mm-hmm. And there's talk that meditation helps increase gray matter in the hippocampus. And that's another component of the limbic area of the brain. Now, the gray matter helps us think faster, think better on our toes. It helps create better, easier synapses in the mind. Mm-hmm. That's my limited understanding of those two things. And I think that's the premise of why meditation is starting to, now that some of these studies are coming out, people are starting to look at what is meditation. And, you know, that area of meditation doesn't actually interest me all that much. I'm content knowing that meditation takes me into the silence and it builds a relationship with God. That's good enough for me. I don't need the science. But the science is actually helping, you know, it become more widely accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I was asked to go and teach mindfulness at the police college, the Elmer Police College here in Ontario. You know, that's something that would have never happened 10 years ago. There's no way I would be asked to bring meditation into the police college. They would laugh me out the door even if I offered to do it.
Yeah, right.
And now the dialogue's been opened up, and the invites were extended, and I went and did it.
Mm-hmm. How was it received?
they were a really kind group of officers. They were, it was a senior officer course. So it wasn't just young recruits, but it was a group of seasoned officers. There was some, there was a lot of look of skepticism in the room, not going to lie.
Mm-hmm.
They were a tough crowd. They didn't have as many questions as I would have liked, but they, nonetheless, they were interested and their heads started nodding by the end of the session. So I was able to convince them. I opened up the dialogue and maybe got them a little bit interested in meditation. Mm-hmm. Did I teach them meditation? No. I got them interested in it, and I opened up the dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what is the objective then to meditation?
It's multi-layered, but for me, my objective is about my relationship with God in the silence in me. But there, I've also used my meditation to help me if I'm struggling. Like say something really gets me angry. That's when my meditation practice really becomes a useful tool. And, or if I get terrible news, sometimes I'll just sit down and I'll go into meditation for a minute. It just, if it's appropriate. I remember I was out west interviewing tattoo artists for a project I'm working on, and I got news my mom had a heart attack. That was like devastating news to get when you're halfway across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And my father's on the phone and he said, you know, just hang in there. Don't, I'm like, I'll come home. And he's like, no, don't come home yet. Just hang there for a little bit. And after I got off the phone with him, like my heart was racing and I was a wreck. So my friend that I was with, I actually sent him in to do the interview that I was about to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sat in the car and I just closed my eyes and meditated and I regrouped myself. I brought, it helped me kind of calm down and bring things back into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, she has not passed. It's a heart attack. Many people have those nowadays. There's amazing doc. But my objectives with meditation, you know, are sometimes it differs for differing days. One of my objectives to meditation is to maintain a sense of awareness of the stillness in me all day with my eyes open. And this is a practice that has become a bigger and bigger objective for me to, with my meditation, is to hold an awareness of the stillness in me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that place you go to, when you're drumming and you're in the zone, you're in the pocket, you're in the silence, the stillness, whatever you want to call it, you can maintain that without drumming, without gardening, or whatever it is that you do that brings you into that space. It's not the vehicle that is necessary to get there. It's simply by turning inward and resting your attention on the soul.
Once you discover who you are, your desire to leave this moment loses its spark. For only in the presence of this moment can we know ourselves.
The other thing, too, is one might think that if their head's in a dark place, that meditation may bring out some dark things in them. Maybe people would be cautious against meditating if we're talking about like resting within ourselves. We feel that perhaps what's inside is not something we want to rest in. Is meditation still a good idea for those people?
It depends on the person. And for some, then if their head is going into a dark place and they're not able to detach themselves from their thoughts and rest deeper within, then meditation can become something that now we're fixating on our problems. We're closing our eyes and then fixating on a problem. And so we're just sitting there talking to ourselves, which is not meditation. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's a great idea. I have a relationship with the practice of meditation that deeply draws me into a place of great peace and silence. However, I've cultivated that over a long period of time with practice and a willingness to just keep applying attention toward my meditation practice. But if you're new to meditation and you haven't had a lot of experience with it, if you're in a dark place, I recommend that you communicate that with another person. That you just pick up the phone or get in your car and drive yourself and put yourself in the front of another person that has ears and eyeballs and talk and communicate, share yourself. Mm-hmm. Give your family a chance to love and support you, or give your friends that you know that love and support you the opportunity to do so.
So that's one situation where people might be skeptical about meditation if it's a good thing for them. The other thing I could see as well, and this is, you alluded to it earlier, where like 20 years ago, meditation seemed like some sort of pixie dust. There might be people that feel that meditation is not possible for them. Is meditation something that anyone can do and achieve some results with? Or
absolutely. You know, when you look at meditation, if the history and the origin of meditation goes way back. Okay, so when you look at the different mystical traditions or the different religions of the world, at the center of all of them has been you find meditation. You find meditation in the Eastern traditions, where and some of those traditions are, you know, 7,000 and 8,000 years old. Mm. You know, it's a grandfather compared to Christianity. Christianity is a baby compared to the Ayurvedic structure and systems. And so meditation, you know, we've been doing meditation for thousands of years, and it is completely possible for anyone to embrace meditation and find benefit with it. The only thing that's a barrier to your meditation is your non-willingness to sit down and let go of your mind.
Sit quietly until the silence becomes a love song in you.
And the judgments you may place on it. Because I can see that being a big thing. Yeah, there might be people that just can't get down with it before they experience it. It's very much like most of this. It's like you may not understand the value, what it can do for you, until you remove the judgments that you may place on certain things and just try experiencing it. It's like you said with apple pie. You don't know if you like it until you try it. That's I love right. apple pie. Mm-hmm. I've tried lots of it.
and I wouldn't try to convince anyone that or tell what meditation is going to do for them. Mm-hmm. You know, my only thing that is I would try to convince someone that maybe what they think about meditation may not be true, and it'd be better to have experience than an opinion. Without any experience, and experience doesn't happen through a 2-minute trial period, and that's the thing with what we have to remember, that if meditation is more than it's something to know about, it's a practice, and anything that's a practice, it requires some time and energy put into it. Mm-hmm. It's like you're drumming. You didn't get to be an amazing drummer without practice, without time in dirt time. That's one expression a friend of mine used to say all the time. You need to put in your dirt time. You know, mm-hmm. the time that you spend practicing meditation. So there's this common paradigm that people believe that we're required to study.
Mm-hmm. So how do we begin to understand how to meditate? And does it require a lot of study? Like you just said, you just mentioned the word.
Yeah, no. And exactly. We don't have to study for it. It's more of an experience than anything.
Mm-hmm.
How to begin to understand how to meditate is simply by trying it. You know, it's very, very simple. And it's the only thing that makes it complex is the mind. It's the ideas or the things that we've projected onto meditation that makes it more difficult than it is. My old teacher used to tell a story about two different types of spiritual seekers. And there's the type of people out there that if God was chocolate, then there'd be a certain amount of them that would put chocolate on a pedestal and they'd analyze it and study it and research it and do test it and just they would know everything about it. They'd praise the word of chocolate. And then there'd be those people who just ate it and experienced it.
Mm.
And didn't care about, you know, the properties of it, but was more interested in having the internal experience of ingesting it. And that's sort of the difference between a meditation practice and a study of meditation. In a study of meditation, you only know about something and without really actually truly having the experience. So meditation is kind of like the concept of unity. It's something you experience, not know about.
Right. Absolutely. And so in the book, you mentioned some different meditation techniques. If you could explain what those are.
Yeah, there's open-eyed meditation where you're just surrendering yourself to the task at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one that has happened many times while I'm tattooing my clients. And this is sort of what actually got me on my spiritual path. When I was younger, I used to go to my grandma's house, and my grandma was deaf. And so when I went there, the TV would always be off and it would just be quiet. And then her and I used to play cards a lot. So when we were playing cards, we'd pass notes back and forth. I know this is a little bit of a sidestep from your question.
Yeah, yeah.
But we would just pass notes back and forth and we would enter the silence. And it felt really good. And it felt like there would be a point where we stopped passing notes and we'd just be quiet. And so those experiences I remember carrying forward. And then while I was tattooing, that started happening to me. That experience of the peacefulness I had experienced with my grandma as a little boy was coming up while I was tattooing because I was going into open-eyed meditation. By narrowing the mind into what's called single-pointedness, and just focusing on one thing without talking to my thoughts, my mind would fall into meditation. And I'd fall very deeply into meditation, so much that I would start losing control of my facial muscles. You know, I'd always know when I was really getting in the pocket with tattooing because I'd start drooling. I'd feel drool come out of my mouth because my brain would go into a different wave. At a certain brainwave, you lose facial control and you start to drool a bit. So I was having these meditation experiences while I'm tattooing. And the irony is that the deeper I went into these meditative states while I was working, the better the work was getting.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But what I didn't know at that point is I was opening up to I was letting go of the mind and creativity was just kind of flowing through me. And using me as a vehicle. So that's one form. Do something and then just totally let yourself go in the process. Get lost in the act of doing. So whether it's playing an instrument, going for a walk, a run, gardening, please don't take up tattooing if you don't know how to do it. You take up dentistry. Everybody in this area a lot of people want to be a tattooist and they start scratching people's skin and you never hear people saying, gosh, I really want to be a dentist and start pulling everybody's teeth for them. Okay. So that's one. Open-eyed meditation and moving meditations are part of that. You can do meditation while you're in movement and it's a beautiful time to surrender and let go. I used to do this when I worked in the factory. I would be piling boxes. So I would get into this moving meditation where I was just letting go and I was only focused on every box that I touched and I'm just kind of lost in the movement of it. Then there's meditation where you're using guidance. You can listen to a guided meditation where somebody walks you through that. There's lots of them on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can use music where it's just abstract background music and you're just letting go. And then there's mantra meditation. And I'll explain mantra meditation to you. I'll give you a five-step mantra meditation technique. Yeah. Okay. So with mantra meditation, you make yourself comfortable. Start breathing slowly in and out. Take some time with your deep breaths. Bring them in through your nose and out through your mouth. And then once you feel your body kind of starting to relax, you can introduce a mantra. Now, your mantras could be anything. Like, you can just make up a mantra on the spot. You can say, I love my life, or I love my child, or, you know, Om Mani Padme Hum. Okay, you can use Buddhist mantras or whatever mantra you want. Something that makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love chocolate bars. Okay, so you got your mantra, you're breathing in nice and slow. Once you feel you're in rhythm with your breathing, begin to say and repeat your mantra. Now you can repeat the mantra over and over, just slowly introducing it, not jamming it into your experience, but just kind of slowly letting the mantra come out. You can say it aloud or silently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, or another way you can do the mantra meditation is you introduce the mantra and then you just allow yourself to fall into the deepest place in you. And then when you feel like when your thoughts start to arise again, you catch yourself thinking, then you just throw out the mantra again. You keep resting your attention on the quietest place in you. And that's one of the things to remember when you're doing a mantra meditation, that when you do start thinking, and you probably will, like almost always, that you very gently introduce your mantra, and it's not a time to beat yourself up. Do not make your meditation time about being mean to yourself, because that's something that will happen, is that people will get frustrated and they'll start saying, I'm stupid, or I can't get this, and I can't do it. You know, they start getting into a dialogue that's not very loving or kind to themselves. You just slowly introduce your mantra back into your experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a few different meditation techniques. With the mantra one too, you can play around with it. Let your imagination roll. Imagine that your mantra, instead of saying a mantra, that you have a bag of stones and you're going to throw them into a pond, and they're magical stones. And when you throw the stone in, you don't know what's going to happen. So as you throw it in, you watch. When you notice that your attention is no longer on the water, watching for something to happen, then just bring yourself back and throw another stone in the water. You know, you could be playful with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So you had mentioned a couple of obstacles that people may come to experience. Having thoughts and then knowingness of that you want to release your thoughts can actually be somewhat of a challenge. I know anytime that I've tried, I notice my thoughts almost more because everything's so quiet. Are there any other types of obstacles that someone might experience when they try meditating for the first time or when they're kind of new to it?
Yeah, there is some typical experiences that I've noticed. And it's commentaries in the mind. There'll be a commentary like, it's not working. And there's another commentary that says, I need to know more about this. And that's a big one, because the mind likes to gather information so it can claim its worth. And we don't need to know so much about meditation rather than just doing it. Another commentary of the mind is that I would be better spending this time doing chores that I've been putting off, you know, or maybe I'll just go for a bike ride, or maybe I'll just go visit a friend. This is a waste of time. Nothing's happening. You know, there's a myriad of different dialogues that will pop into your mind that will just say, don't sit there and do nothing. there's almost like a program in us to keep moving. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen that t-shirt, and it says, Jesus, come and look busy. that sort of like just pops in my mind. You know, there's this idea that we, and well, more than an idea, it's a practice and a habit that we just constantly are on the move. So meditation is kind of the opposite of moving. It's we just slow down. So there's going to be, sometimes there's a little bit of resistance to the practice of meditation. And remember that one of the obstacles is committing yourself to spending some time doing it. You know, I would say 3 times a day, 20 minutes a day, an hour in your day. Like that may seem like a mountain of time for some. And another one of the obstacles is that we tend to think that once we've had a meditation and it was really good, that we start trying to recreate that same experience over and over again. So that's a trap in meditation. If you are trying to recreate the same scenario as your last meditation, then you know it could greatly take away from the experience that's unfolding. Mm-hmm. So we come to each meditation with being innocent and fresh with each one. Think of them as everyone's going to be different.
And is there a specific environment required to be effective with your meditation?
No. And one of the things that my teacher used to say is go meditate in an airport. And not to create a specific room in your house. You can have a meditation room if that's what you want or need. You know, that's fine. But the idea is that you practice meditation in all different spaces, in all different circumstances, loud environments, quiet environments. Don't put anything in front of your ability to do meditation. When we can build up a lot of ideas around meditation and then start to build up requirements to before we can actually do it, which eventually keeps us away from doing it. You know, so, and I've heard people, you know, like they are meditated with people and they have to put a candle on, or they have to have their meditation cushion, or they got to play this one CD. You know, there's nothing keeping you from that silent space within yourself. And it doesn't require anything but your attention being turned inward to the silence, to the most quiet part of you. It doesn't have requirements. We have requirements, or rather the mind has requirements.
And you have been, we've been sort of circling around this a little bit, but if there's any final advice that you can suggest to people how to best create a lifestyle around meditation.
Yeah, it's bringing your open-eyed time. So find time to do open-eyed meditation, whether it be at work or, you know, practice open-eyed meditation when you're not working. Mm-hmm. Get used to moving around, but staying anchored in that silent, still place. At the end of a meditation, be sure to, when you finish the meditation with your eyes closed, to open your eyes and then just stay in that space that you're in. And that helps teach you to, that helps build your open-eyed meditation practice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and to make sure that, like I say, you carve out some time for you to practice doing meditation. And, you know, think of the mind as just like the movie screen. And this is something that I teach people when I teach meditation, is I'll tell them, you know, when you go to a movie theater and you look at the screen, it's blank, it's white. And then the ads come on, and then the movie eventually starts playing. And at the end of the movie, the lights come back on and the screen is blank again. But is that screen shot up full of bullet holes and a cop and robber scene? The screen is completely unaffected. So when we sit down to do meditation, your mind is a screen that your thoughts are dropping onto. And our job is to be the watcher. we just watch the mind, you know, and that in itself is a whole different, another style of meditation. You just watch your mind. You don't talk back to the thoughts. Think of the mind as a movie. It's not real. And so you, and then at the end of the movie, much like the screen, we don't have to be affected by any of the thoughts that are being projected onto our mind.
You also say in the book, there's a message where you say meditations are like snowflakes. I think I know what that means because every snowflake is different, but is that what you're getting at with that?
Yeah, they're unique, and I'm asking people not to build up expectations on how they think the meditation is going to go. I've had meditations that have thrown me so deep, and just I felt so expanded and alive, and I've had other meditations that just felt flat. So be innocent in your practice of meditation. Come to it without any expectations. Come to it without any predetermined outcomes going on in your mind.
And to wrap this up, if we could just revisit the silence for a moment.
The silence is as close as the next breath that you breathe in. And it's like finding love in ourselves. It's not a difficult or unobtainable thing to go into. In the silence, we discover the totality of who and what we are on a capacity that the mind could never understand or come close to consuming the vastness of the silence. So the silence is more than it's you, it's everything.
My heart speaks the loudest when my mind is the quietest.